Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Next week, the Russian President Vladimir Putin is planning a trip to Uzbekistan. This is on the top of, you know, much speculations in the recent years about Mirziyayev's friendly view of Russia, especially his connection with the influential Russian oligarch Usmanov. On the top of that, we have also seen increasing activities of Russian companies, especially in the energy sector of Uzbekistan, which is a dramatic change compared to Uzbek-Russian relations under the previous president, Islam Karimov. So Mirziyayev is way closer to Russia. But how good is this relations and how good can it get? And how much of this improved relations has translated into real policy, and where does Putin's trip fit into all this? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Joanna Lillis, Chief Central Asia Correspondent for Eurasia Net, Dr. David Lewis, Associate Professor of International Relations at the University of Exeter, Sirojitin Talibov, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Very nice to have you. So let's kick off this debate, Sirojitin, with you today. I just heard that Russian Defense Minister Shoigu is currently in Uzbekistan. What's going on?
Shavkat Mirziyoyev is trying to strengthen its policy by becoming much closer with Russia, especially with Putin, and not only in the economic sphere, but in military sphere as well. And I think this is we are seeing the total transition of Uzbekistan from the orienting to from the West to Russia, I think. Karimov has always tried to be closer to West, although he was very autocratic and, you know, he was a tyrant. But he dreamt of being, you know, closer to the West rather than Russia. But with Mirziyoyev, we see a different case.
The Shoigu, do you know anything specific on his agenda?
I think their plan is to, you know, to strengthen in military and not only in economic, but intelligence, security, and military spheres. But I don't know the specific agenda of Shoigu.
Joanna, what are you hearing? Like, when we talk about military defense discussion between Russia and Uzbekistan, the first thing comes into mind is the possibility of Uzbekistan joining to CSTO.
I mean, I think it is a possibility, but I think, you know, there's been certainly speculation in the regional media that Uzbekistan may, during Putin's visit or afterwards, may announce that it's going to join the CSTO. However, well, I think we have to take all this with a bit of a pinch of salt too, because, you know, I mean, Uzbekistan has managed fine without the CSTO since it left the organization in 2012. And we'd have to wonder, you know, what would be in it for Uzbekistan if it was going to rejoin. Certainly, Uzbekistan is open now to, under Mirziyoyev, to military cooperation with Russia. I mean, we saw last year that Uzbekistan had its first military maneuvers with Russia since 2005, I believe. So, you know, that was quite something. But I think that it would be quite a big step and a big declaration for Uzbekistan to actually join the CSTO, because it would be throwing its kind of lot in with Russia from the military and security point of view. And I think it's more likely that Uzbekistan will prefer to cooperate with Russia bilaterally without making that kind of big statement that here we are in the Russian sphere of security influence kind of thing.
Bruce, if the announcement of joining CSTO not coming out of after this trip, then, in terms of military, what else the Uzbek leadership might be talking to Shoigu today?
Well, for one thing, Uzbekistan's military is armed with Russian or Soviet-made weapons. I don't know how old some of that stuff is. So there's always going to be a need for them to upgrade and purchase new stuff. And I know that military technical cooperation was one of the things that Shoigu was talking about when he was in Uzbekistan, as he is still in Uzbekistan. So that's something that that certainly would be on the agenda, I would imagine, is Uzbekistan, as all countries countries would like to modernize its military as much as possible. And you know, again, since their whole military is based on Russian-made hardware, that's the country that they're going to have to go to. If I could just put in on the CSTO, though, real quickly, too, I would also mention that one of the problems that Uzbekistan had with being in the CSTO and specifically passed legislation about was that they didn't want their soldiers to have to serve under another command, and they didn't want to have to allow other countries to be able to use military bases on Uzbek soil. And so that was all aimed at the CSTO. Until they amend their legislation as it stands now, they should not be able to join the CSTO, which doesn't mean they couldn't cast that aside by tomorrow. But as it stands right now, according to their own laws, this shouldn't be possible for them.
David, I will get to Putin's trip very shortly. But before that, let me also take your point on this. Just ahead of Putin's trip, Shoigu is in Uzbekistan. What does it tell you?
Well, this is the result of 2 years, really, of improving military-to-military relations between Russia and Uzbekistan. Hmm. Been a series of visits, a lot of training going on, military-to-military contacts, and quite a few contracts, as Bruce was saying, in the area of re-equipping and re-modernizing the military. I think Uzbekistan looks at Russia, which of course has gone through its own military modernization program in the last few years, as a potential model for reforming its own military, which has long needed reform, I think, and to try and redirect the military towards key security threats, which obviously are primarily on the border with Afghanistan. So I think there's mutual interest in a relationship there. I would agree with the others that this is unlikely to go to the level of rejoining the CSTO. After all, Uzbekistan has joined it twice and left it twice, and I think there's no upside really for Uzbekistan to develop those kind of relationships again. It can develop most of those on a bilateral basis. There is some talk of a potential sort of restructuring of the CSTO, which is quite a moribund organization in lots of ways, to allow for dialogue partners or some kind of looser arrangement. And that might be something I think that comes up at the meeting, but we'll see.
Okay. Now the President Putin's upcoming visit, I think he will be in Tashkent at the end of next week. So what is on his agenda, Srojitin?
I don't know his agenda, but what I can say now that Mirziyoyev's security policy, military policy, is Russia-oriented, despite the fact that at first glance he might be seen as a political reformist. In fact, he has already managed to push the entire Uzbek political, intelligence, security and military establishment towards Moscow, totally adopting a Russian so-called security framework. For instance, all key posts within the Uzbek political, intelligence, security and military establishment have been given to those who have strong ties to Russia, Aripov, Ramatov, Abdullayev and others. Furthermore, it can be observed that the numbers of the officers from the Uzbek intelligence security machinery were in a way another studying at Russian intelligence security institutions have sharply increased. It is obvious that Uzbekistan is cutting ties and becoming closer and closer to Putin's regime, and I think Mirziyoyev sees his future with Russia.
Joanna, what's your thought on this?
Well, I mean, it's certainly the case that Mirziyoyev has a much more, you know, friendly attitude towards Russia, much less suspicious attitude towards Russian, you know, possible Russian hegemonic ambitions in the region. But I would also add that, you know, he's also very open to cooperation with the West. I don't mean so much in terms of military and security, because, you know, there's only one big player in this region when it comes to military and security issues, and that is Russia. But I mean that, you know, Mirziyoyev has only just returned from France, where he's made it very clear that he also wants to seek much closer partnerships with the West. And this was his first visit to a European Union member state since he came to power a couple of years ago. And, you know, it's very clear that, you know, in a way, I think he's perhaps modelling his foreign policy. I'm talking more about foreign policy than specifically military and security. So I think while I definitely agree that good. He's much more open to cooperation with Russia. He's also very clearly wanting closer relationships with Western countries, casting aside Uzbekistan's former pariah reputation and becoming, being welcomed into the international fold.
Yeah, we will deep dive in this discussion a little bit later. But before, just to touch on a couple of other things in relation to Putin's upcoming visit to Uzbekistan. Bruce, during this trip, I think one of the items on the agenda is to launch the nuclear power plant in Uzbekistan. What else has been happening in the economic sphere between these two countries and what might happen during this trip?
Well, the nuclear power thing, of course, is big because it's going to put Uzbekistan on the hook for a huge Russian loan. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, we got to remember that even last year, Mirziyoyev reached out to Russia to help solve some of their oil problems. He's looking for 10 million tons of oil a year to come via a pipeline that goes through Kazakhstan. And he got all the agreements and they've been working on the pipelines. And it's supposed to go to a new refinery, which is also being built by a Russian company and will be located in Mirziyoyev's native Jizak region. So he's already reached out to Russia to solve some of the chronic fuel problems they had in Uzbekistan for many years now. So that's another thing. And you mentioned too that usually Russia is the one, it's strange, but Russia is the one, even during Karimov's day, that really filled the void as far as energy projects are concerned. We know that Karimov was not a big fan of Russia, but if you look at who is developing oil and gas fields in Central Asia, it's mostly Gazprom and Lukoil. And it has been, for 20 years now. There were connections that were kept even under Karimov. And that's one sector that Putin will undoubtedly capitalize on, because that has always been a strong relationship, just like the security services have always been a strong relationship. So I would look for Putin to really press the economic ties, a lot like China does, similar. Mm-hmm. We'll give you a bunch of loans so that you can buy stuff from us. Just solidify to the extent possible his relationship with Uzbekistan.
David, your thought on this? What the Putin's trip is really about?
Well, I think there will be a lot of discussion of economics. There will be discussion of labor migrants, for example, their conditions in Russia, I'm sure. Mirziyoyev has been much more positive than Karimov about trying to improve conditions for Uzbek citizens working inside Russia. And I think that will come up, obviously, the energy and nuclear relationship. I think, above all, still it's a geopolitical visit. Uzbekistan has opened up to the world. And if you like, for those who love the sort of great game metaphors, has come back into play. But I think the difference here, of course, is that Uzbekistan is calling some of the shots. The lesson of the Karimov years is that isolation doesn't give you very much leverage, actually, in international relations. And Mirziyoyev's approach, I think, is much more balanced. I don't think it's completely shifting towards Moscow. It's very much a multi-vector policy. And so far, we've seen Mirziyoyev playing a more independent role and also asserting Central Asia as a region. And I think that's caused a little bit of nervousness in Moscow. Remember, earlier in the year, there was a meeting of heads of state initiated, really, by Mirziyoyev, trying to build up Central Asian regional initiatives without always having either China or Russia in the room. And I think that's an important trend, and Russia needs to come to terms with that. More active Central Asian diplomacy on its own behalf.
Mm. The Central Asian initiative is one thing. And also, I wonder how Putin looks into the picture when he sees Mirziyoyev shaking hands with Macron, with Donald Trump, with other world leaders. But we will talk about this a little bit later. So talking about economy, who wants to take this question? Maybe Bruce. So could Uzbekistan also consider joining Euro-Asian Union? Because we are kind of comparing Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, given the fact that Kazakhstan is already part of that organization.
I wouldn't think that was coming up anytime very soon. There's certainly, under new leadership, a lot of people are giving Uzbekistan a lot of leeway in their relationship, and they're not trying to pressure them on anything. And that's not just Russia, that's a lot of people. And certainly Mirziyoyev would be aware of the problems that exist within the Eurasian Economic Union already. We've seen, bans on shipments of meat from Russia to Kazakhstan Kazakhstan to Russia and Kyrgyzstan to Kazakhstan. And, those are just small examples of some of the problems they're going into. Longer term, if Russia really wanted to cause problems for Uzbekistan, they would just make sure that the same tariffs that apply to all non-EEU countries apply to Uzbekistan. And Uzbekistan has kind of a ceiling of EEU countries over the top of it. You know, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan will join one time. So they haven't done that. Again, I wouldn't think they would do that anytime soon because, you know, they want better relationships with Uzbekistan in the future. But if for some reason the Kremlin decided that they weren't getting what they wanted, that would be an option, I suppose, is they could say, fine, trade through Afghanistan and Turkmenistan and Iran if you can do that. But if your goods are going to cross EU territory, you're going to have to pay.
So if, let's say, Sarajit, go ahead.
I think the prime driver of Mirziyoyev's reforms at the moment is jobs or the need to create enough for a youthful and fast-growing population. Some 56% of Uzbeks are aged below 30. More than 600,000 a year are entering the jobs market. So we have to fill that market. So I think Mirziyoyev will focus on creating additional jobs in Russia, will be aiming to protect the rights of Uzbek migrants in Russia. You know, an estimated 2.5 million people of Uzbekistan live and work in Russia, and a million more in Kazakhstan. So joining the Eurasian Economic Union will be, Mirziyoyev will also be considering of that option as well.
Okay, Joanna, just one last point before we get into break. So when you look into Putin's trip, does the timing tells you anything?
Well, the timing, I mean, Putin's trip has been planned certainly for a few weeks, and certainly they've been working on it for a while. I mean, obviously, it's interesting from the point of view of Mirziyoyev, fresh from France, where he got the real red carpet treatment.
Yeah.
And obviously, given the tensions between Russia and the West, you know, it's a bit of a vying for who's going to be Uzbekistan's next best friend. That's all that springs to mind.
Okay, thank you, Joanna. So the relations between these two leaders are certainly better than Karimov and Putin's. But how good is this? How good can it get? And where is this headed going forward? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today in the Majlis. I'm joined by Joanna Lillis, Chief Central Asia Correspondent for Eurasia Net. She's joining us from Almaty. Dr. David Lewis, Associate Professor of International Relations at the University of Exeter. He's joining us from London. Sirojuddin Tolibov, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, is in Prague alongside Bruce Panier, who's the Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing Uzbek-Russian relations in the light of President Putin's upcoming trip to Tashkent. Okay, so we kind of agreed that these leaders in the countries are way closer compared to Uzbekistan under Karimov. So when Putin comes, this will be one of, I believe, many interactions that Mirziyoyev had in recent years with the President Putin. So where is this relations concentrated mostly, Bruce?
Well, that's a good one. Like I said, to date, it looks like it's been more economic-based, although, of course, we know that they talk about security all the time, and military ties are certainly getting closer. You know, I think this is generally just like, you know, we're in the early stages of this. Obviously, Russia would like to have much better ties with Uzbekistan than it did under Karimov. You know, it's worth mentioning, probably at this point, that way back when Vladimir Putin was first elected president of Russia in 2000, his first official state visit as Russia's president was to Uzbekistan in May, I think, in May 2000. And that said a lot to Karimov. I mean, they were good friends for a while, and that fell apart. So that's something worth remembering as we go forward and watch Mirziyoyev and Putin develop the relationship between their two countries, is that we have seen something like this before. You know, admittedly, Mirziyoyev seems a little bit more receptive to Russia, warmer ties with Russia than Karimov ever did. But certainly, we, like I said, it's happened before. Now, Putin, I think, like I said, he just wants to make sure the relationship is much more solid. Why? You know, it's even if he if they don't want dominance, you know, the same kind of relationship that Russia has with Kyrgyzstan or Tajikistan, which is basically Russia tells them what to do and shows their discontent very clearly through various levers, mostly economic, when things fall apart. Uzbekistan has been for years one of the holdouts in the CIS. It's in the CIS, but it's been resistant to Russian influence on its own soil. I would think that Putin would be looking for something, looking to tone that down a little bit, you know, without having Mirziyoyev say that we're casting our lot in with Russia. He would rather have a relationship with Uzbekistan that didn't show the kind of resistance that Karimov showed to a lot of Russian decisions, so that he could portray the CIS as being much more harmonious and integrated than it actually is, because it could be a bad example for other CIS countries, although we've seen some of them have left anyway due to Russian actions. But what he would like, you know, as I said, was be a friendly Uzbekistan that fits in with a friendly CIS from his point of view.
Mm-hmm. Suraj, the same point to you. And also, in addition to that, is you mentioned earlier that Mirziyoyev is surrounded by people who are leaning towards Russia. So yes. What is the gain Mirziyoyev or his aides hoping to
Mirziyoyev knows that the country needs investments, especially from the powerful countries.
But why Russia?
It's a huge role here.
But I'm saying why Russia is the country which can invest. I mean, Russia is having its own economic
trouble. Because business tycoons that are personally close to Putin and Kremlin, like Shadayev, Usmanov, Lukoil, and etc., have been granted and diminished access to Uzbek markets already. And they're playing a key role in reforms. So I think that I can see the future of Uzbekistan being closer to Russia and Putin's Kremlin.
Hmm. Joanna, what Russia is gaining from this?
Well, I definitely agree with Bruce and others that Russia has quite a lot to gain politically from a closer relationship or a better relationship with Uzbekistan. And we should remember as well that Russia doesn't necessarily need Uzbekistan to join the Eurasian Union to send a signal that, you know, it's increasing its influence over the region. Russia just needs a better relationship and a signal that, you know, Uzbekistan is closer to Russia, doesn't reject cooperation with Russia so much as under Karimov. I think what we should remember is as well, we have to cast our minds back a little bit and remember just how damaging perhaps the Ukraine conflict was for Russian relations with some members of, you know, some former Soviet states. And I don't only mean, you know, the ones that are not allied to Russia. I'm thinking in this case, for example, of the tensions that, you know, the annexation of Crimea and the allegations of fomenting separatism in southeastern Ukraine were for Russia's relationship with Kazakhstan. So they also caused tensions with what is effectively Russia's closest ally. So if Russia can, you know, these years later kind of rebuild its image somewhat and show itself again to be a country to which former Soviet states are rallying to forge partnerships, you know, that would improve Russia's standing in the region and of course also in the world.
David, your thoughts on this? I mean, Russia, certainly, as Joanna was talking about, has some priorities when looking into Uzbekistan. Is that policy aligned with Mirziyoyev's?
I think so. I mean, I think they have different policies, of course. Mm. Mirziyoyev is a past master of this, right? He's part of this Uzbek elite that's been very good at maneuvering between different powers, and he will continue that process. So I don't think he's quite in Moscow's pocket, as it were. I think it's a much more independent line that is still going on here. Don't forget China, which is still really the biggest potential investor in Uzbekistan, although certainly some of the big investments recently have been from Russian oligarchs and energy businesses. But nevertheless, over the longer term, China is really the potential source of finance for major infrastructure upgrades of the kind that Uzbekistan really needs to build these sort of big transit projects and to integrate into the wider region. So certainly, I don't think this is a one-way street. I think Mirziyoyev is continuing this balancing act, both in the economy and in politics. In security, I think they can see the benefit of a closer relationship with Moscow, certainly. But again, it's going to be as much as possible on Uzbekistan's terms. For Russia, I think there's obviously several advantages, but the minimum really is that Russia wants to exclude Western military and security presence from Uzbekistan. That's its minimum red line. Don't forget, you know, back in 2005, the US had an air base in Uzbekistan. There was talk of, well, there was a strategic partnership with Washington. So there's certainly a nervousness about Uzbekistan as a potential Western ally in the region. And Russia is doing its very best to head off that possibility. In fact, just want to add one more thing, which is, of course, Afghanistan, which we haven't mentioned yet. Both Russia and Uzbekistan are trying to play a significant role in the Afghan conflict, in the negotiations around Afghanistan. And there we've seen some interesting divergence between Moscow and Tashkent. Russia's been running its so-called Moscow format talks to try and bring in the Taliban to peace talks. But Uzbekistan has launched its own, had a Tashkent conference in March, of course. And there was a little bit of tension, I think, between Moscow and Tashkent over the exact format of that process. So it's certainly not that they're simply on exactly the same page, but there's plenty of areas for cooperation. And broadly, they see the end game in Afghanistan in the same kind of way.
Srajitin, maybe you can talk a little bit about this. You know, on one hand, we are talking about Mirziyoyev's kind of balancing act, talking to Russia and everybody. And on the other hand, look into this from Putin's lenses. When Putin sees him assembling the Central Asian leaders in Kazakhstan, like he did earlier, and without presence of Russian leaders there, and when Mirziyoyev goes to Paris shaking hands with Macron, and then goes to Washington shaking hands with Trump, when Putin looks into those pictures, what does he see?
I don't know. I have to ask Putin, but I am certain that that he won't be happy to see that. And the ambitions that Kremlin has have not changed since the collapse of the Soviet Union to regain power. And this process will continue in one or other way. And we can see the Russian information machine is also working, exaggerating events in Afghanistan, showing, you know, not talking, constantly talking about the threat from Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda-linked groups or ISIS groups, mostly from Central Asia. And this one way, another way, of course, you know, by getting the biggest natural resources in Uzbekistan or in Central Asia, they will take the control of the political establishment as well. And these are the ways of how Putin acts, and we haven't seen any other, I'd say, Putin's variability. They're always one-dimensional, and this is why I'm not that optimistic.
Bruce, just to continue that question in a little bit differently, you know, Putin and Mirziyoyev, on one hand, they are getting closer, and there are also some policy differences. Like, this is a big if genuinely Mirziyoyev is trying to improve rule of law in his country, at least this is the impression from West that he is trying to do. If he's really serious about this and genuine about this, it would also be kind of an act opposite to what President Putin is trying to do lately. How comfortable Putin should be or would be if every other country under his influence move in the direction that Mirziyoyev seems to be moving?
Well, it's not like Mirziyoyev is a democratic reformer.
Yeah.
So that's certainly a plus as far as Putin's concerned. I mean, Mirziyoyev does want to improve his economy. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, we've seen, like, I haven't seen any signs that indicate to me that Mirziyoyev is really interested in improving the domestic political situation, things like allowing independent political parties, non-government aligned political parties, free media, things like that. You know, so that all plays very well with Putin, who's also for control over these kind of things. I don't see that they would have much problem seeing eye to eye. And let's remember too that you know, when Andijan happened and the U.S. and the West criticized Uzbek government, Karimov turned immediately to China and Russia for support within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. But so that won't have been lost on Mirziyoyev, who was already a prime minister at that time. That Russia can play a good balancing role if Uzbekistan finds itself being criticized for lack, you know, not just lack of reform, but actually outrageous actions against its own population. You know, so I don't think that Putin would see it too much of a threat in Mirziyoyev's reforms, certainly as long as they're on the economic level, which is as far as they've gone. I mean, Uzbekistan wants to play a bigger regional role. That would be something that, as David, I think, mentioned already when they had the conference in Astana earlier this year, that was, you know, that was one thing that kind of irked Russia a little bit. And I remember the reports at the time, you know, that Itertas and Interfax either ignored it or downplayed the significance of this meeting entirely. You know, that would be something that Russia would like to have more control over anyway. They don't want to see Uzbekistan be the regional power broker, at least not without some kind of input from Russia on how that's going to go, as a proxy maybe, but not as an independent operator.
David, feel free to add anything you would like to add into Bruce's points. The other thing is, like, we all agree that, you know, Russian-Uzbek relations are way better than compared to era under Karimov in Uzbekistan. So how good can it get?
Well, just, you know, there's other factors at play here as well. One of those is the relationship with the West. There's quite a lot of enthusiasm, of course, among Western countries for the changes going on inside Uzbekistan. But as Bruce has mentioned already, there are limits to those changes. And at some point, there's obviously a potential also for some disappointment in the West if things don't go quite as far as they're hoping, or if there's a clampdown, for example, or some kind of political instability. And therefore, I think, you know, Mirziyoyev understands that having Russia on side is critical in political and security terms. That's the state that will always be there and will support him come what may. But relations with the West are critical in terms of getting economic investment. So that's the balance he's trying to play, and it's a difficult one. But I think Russia, to a certain extent, probably understands that. I don't think it's threatened by the economic reforms in Uzbekistan at all. I think they're probably welcomed, certainly by Russian business. And in some ways, you might say that, you know, Mirziyoyev's vision of what the political system will look like is probably not very different from the kind of idea we now call Putinism. You know, strong leader, limitations on political opposition, but a relatively open society and open for foreign investment. So I think there's something there they can talk about how to run this rather sort of postmodern form of authoritarianism that's become popular across Eurasia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, West is now very excited about what they hear from Uzbek leadership. But talking about improving or improved relations between Russia and Uzbekistan, what are the areas that West should keep eye on, Bruce?
That is a good question. I mean, obviously, with Afghanistan, their security is going to be one of the things that they're going to be concerned about. You know, that said, we know that the West will not supply weapons to Uzbekistan. A lot of other things, they'll give them advice, you know, monitoring equipment, things like that, but they're never going to supply them weapons. I think the best the West can hope for now is a more open Uzbekistan that's playing a more constructive role in the region, because, of course, you know, it was a cork in the middle of Central Asia for all those years, certainly the last 10 years of Karimov's rule. It was hard to move across the, if you had to go through Uzbekistan, it meant it was going to be a problem, you know, and so that alone would help if Uzbekistan would just be more of an actual regional player as opposed to a regional obstacle, which they've been. You know, I know a lot of people in the West have great hopes for Mirziyoyev and that this is going to be the Uzbek spring. I mean, how many times have we heard this thing? That's not going to happen. Not at the level that people think, but just an Uzbekistan that was more predictable and more friendly. Because, and by predictable, I mean, if you think about Karimov, how many times he was friends with someone and then turned on, you know, right around, you know, because of some criticism or something like that. He was the most fickle of allies I could imagine for anybody. So if they could just get some stability and know that the Mirziyoyev they're dealing with today is the same one they're going to deal with tomorrow, that I think that would be a major step in the right direction.
Okay. Surojitdin, I hear that you are concerned about Uzbekistan leaning towards Russia. If so, imagine that you are talking to some of the Western leaders. What would you suggest that they keep an eye on Uzbek-Russian relations going forward?
Push the Mirziyoyev more on bringing back the opposition, open up the media, help them to talk freely, release religious prisoners, the established ground for small and medium business, and to make society more open, stop ruling the country like it was before by authoritarian system, authoritarian rule. It must be stopped. Allow secular opposition and even the religious opposition to act freely. Don't push too much on religious institutions. There are a lot of things that there are a lot of gaps in Uzbek society that must be filled. Those hopes that we had 2 years ago are failing now. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't see real changes. Teachers, nurses, doctors are still in cotton harvesting. the police system is still there. I think reforms must be genuine, and we should not be too excited by seeing some small one step forward and two steps backward.
Okay, this is a long, very long list of suggestions. Let's see where Uzbekistan goes with it. Joanna, just last point. So looking into Uzbek-Russian relations, what you will have in mind going forward?
As I said, I do believe that, you know, all the caveats that we've mentioned notwithstanding, I do believe that they will get closer. And I think that both sides have an interest in promoting a closer Russo-Uzbek partnership. From the Russian point of view, it's perhaps more about trying to increase its influence in the post-Soviet space. I mean, obviously, Russia has huge influence already in the post-Soviet space, but Uzbekistan has been a missing link for much of the past couple of decades or more. And, you know, forging a closer relationship with Uzbekistan will increase Russia's influence inevitably, because it's the, you know, on the southern underbelly, on the border with Afghanistan, and, you know, the most populous state in Central Asia and so on. And from the Uzbek point of view, you know, this can result in increased investment, which is really probably Mirziyoyev's top priority. But with that, in order to achieve that, you know, he also needs a close political relationship, which doesn't do him any harm either. It's a counterweight to China. And as the others have already mentioned, if things do go pear-shaped with the Western relationship, where if when the limitations of his reform agenda become increasingly obvious, as they will, you know, Russia will always be there.
Okay. Before to end the discussion, I also just wanted to let the audience know that this year, Majlis Podcast will have live recording of an episode at the annual conference of Central Eurasian Studies Society later this month at the University of Pittsburgh. Hopefully to see many of you in person during and after the recording. With this, thank you very much, Joanna Lillis, Chief Central Asia Correspondent for EurasiaNet. And also big thanks goes to David Lewis, Associate Professor of International Relations at University of Exeter, Srojitin Tolipov, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Uzbek Service, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia Blog, Shlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time in touch today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.